You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Language is something we might take for granted, but it's no secret we have a greater ability to tell stories and offer explanations than any other species. But why is this, and where did language come from? In his new book, Michael Kobalis asks these questions to try and unpack the complex subject that is language. My producer Adam spoke to him about the new book.
Language is possibly one of the most wondrous and complex things that we humans are capable of. How did it all come about?
Well, that's the big question. Nobody really knows. I mean, it's a bit cheeky of me to call it the truth about language. But it's generally regarded, I think, as a kind of miracle. Mm. I mean, that goes back to the Bible, really. But even in modern linguistics, it's considered that language emerged only in our own species, humans, and probably only within the last 100,000 years. And that doesn't make a lot of sense in evolutionary terms.
Yeah.
So the challenge is to try to explain how language might have evolved as a natural phenomenon.
Yeah, because much of your book revolves around the, I guess, debate between you and Noam Chomsky about this Big Bang theory.
Yes.
Could you explain a little bit to us what the debate is and sort of how it
evolved? Well, he's always maintained that language sort of emerged suddenly, even in a single individual, which is a bit hard to swallow because one wonders who that individual talked to.
Mm.
And I think that the argument rests on the fact that language has sort of properties that are unlike any other form of animal communication. And part of that is its open-endedness. You know, there's no limit to the number of things you can say or understand. I mean, you could go to a library with a million books and pick out a book at random and pick out a sentence at random and understand it, even though you'd never seen that sentence before or heard it.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of challenge, I think, how it is that we have such an open-ended system and other animals don't. Now, one of the things, of course, is it's been some 6 million years since the common ancestor of humans and the chimpanzee, and Chomsky and other linguists and some archaeologists want to place the emergence of language very recently. You know, like within, if the last 6 million years was 24 hours, it would be within the last minute.
Wow.
Something like that.
That's very, very soon.
Yes. So I think the challenge is to try to develop a story that's a little bit more continuous and a little bit more, you know, in small increments rather than a sudden bang that gave us fully fledged language.
Yeah. So is this Big Bang theory more to do with, I guess, humans' ego as a superior species?
I think it's got a lot to do with that. The sort of, you know, the necessity to prove that we're somehow superior to other species or other animals and on a different plane altogether.
Mm.
That certainly comes into it. I mean, it's not necessarily mentioned when people are talking about language, but I think it underlies a lot of this sort of belief that we are superior because we have language.
Yeah. So I guess touching on the evolutionary basis of language, how do you think it came about?
Well, I've got, and a number of other people besides myself, have the view that maybe it didn't come out through vocalization at all. You know, animal vocalizations, animal calls, are much more limited and restrictive than is human speech.
Mm.
And I think it probably came about more through gesture, that is, pantomime, that sort of thing was probably the beginnings of language, and it had gradually changed and eventually became speech.
Right.
And that to some people is a hard sell because, you know, how come it was at one time visual and later on auditory? But I think that was probably a gradual process.
Yeah.
And I think speech itself is a gestural system.
Yeah, because you touch in your book upon the findings that our left hemisphere, part of the language system, is also connected to how we use our hands
yes.
at the same time, yeah.
Yes. That's what first drove me to the idea, actually, that, you know, we are right-handed, which means our left brains are kind of responsible for manipulative actions and tool manufacture and that sort of thing.
Right.
But also responsible for speech.
Yeah.
And language. Language, of course, is not just speech. It's also sign language.
Yeah.
And that's another sort of piece of the argument, really, that because language can be purely gestural, as in sign languages, it's not unreasonable to suppose that it started that way.
Yeah. So you also touch upon the fact that we've been able to train primates to almost talk in sign language?
Yeah, that's one of the arguments also. It's chimpanzees, actually.
Chimpanzees.
The great apes. And there were attempts to teach them to talk, but that simply doesn't work.
Yeah.
And what does work is teaching them some form of gesturing and signing. And the other thing that seems to work is giving them a kind of a big sort of map of different symbols, and they point to the symbols to make their meanings known. So it's a bit like a computer screen, and they can point to the different symbols. So that's still a visual system, and it's still gestural because they're just pointing to the symbols to represent different things.
So do you think they're at an early stage of language development, evolutionary-wise?
I think that'd be a long shot.
Right.
I mean, to suppose that this would eventually come about, as a form of sign language. It would take a million years or so.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to wait a while.
Yeah, definitely. I guess one of also the other interesting points that you make in your book is on the development of theory of mind as being essential to language. I particularly like the way you say people in conversation must know what is in each other's mind to know what each other is thinking of. Would you be able to explain how theory of mind works its way into all of this?
Yes, I think language doesn't really work unless you know what's in another person's mind.
Mm.
And we're pretty good at that. I mean, it's one thing that humans do. It's well represented, by the way, in stories and in fiction, you know, where you can readily enter into another person's mind, the hero of the story or whatever. So, and I think that's actually critical to language. So language is kind of superficial in a way. It just sort of jogs what's in both of your minds,
right,
and allows you to think along the same lines.
Yeah. So it's more so communicating what is inside of your mind rather than an external force?
That's exactly right. I mean, right. I think the critical feature of language, actually, is that it allows us to communicate about things that are not present.
Yeah.
And whereas nearly all animal communication, as far as I know, is concerned with the present. I mean, it's concerned with alarm calls and mating calls and territory calls and that sort of thing. Whereas what is special about language is that we can talk about things that are not here and now. So we can talk about what we did yesterday and what we might do tomorrow, and we can tell stories,
right,
which are entirely in another place and another time.
I think it was referred to as displacement?
That's one of the known properties of language, displacement, the ability to talk about what's not in front of you.
Yeah.
And I think it's the critical property. I think it's really, in a sense, what defines language.
Right. So the ability to, I guess, mentally travel is one of the key components.
Yes, mentally travel in time and space,
yeah,
and also mentally travel into other people's minds.
Yeah.
So those three, you know, time, space, and mental travel into other people's minds really define fiction, too.
Mm.
That's what fiction's all about.
Because, yeah, you do touch quite a bit, actually. There's a full chapter devoted to the telling of stories and how it was essential in the development of, I guess, our language system.
Yes, I think so. I think that's that's where language really probably came about. When way back in the sort of hunter-gatherer phases, people talked about their hunting expeditions and so forth, and that sort of enabled people to understand their environment and know what might happen if they went on the next expedition and so forth.
Mm.
So I think it became critical to talk about memory for a start, and then about planning.
Yeah.
And that probably evolved into something more more fictional, more story-like over time.
So stories arose as a means to educate rather than to kind of just express experiences?
Yes, partly to educate or to explain, or to share in an educational kind of way, but often it's not so much, you know, you're teaching people mathematics or anything, or science. You're just sort of teaching people about what happened yesterday and what might happen tomorrow.
Right.
And it blossomed out from there.
Right. Do you feel like they're going to continue as sort of, because obviously the way that our stories are based now, is it still educational in that regard? Has it kept its same purpose?
Well, it's partly educational, partly entertainment. Just sharing generally, I think, which goes beyond education as we normally understand it. Because even if we're telling stories, we're kind of learning about what other people are like, what people do, what the world is like. So in a general sense, yes, educational, but there's a sort of play aspect to it also.
Definitely. For people who are interested in picking up your book, whereabouts are they able to get it?
Gosh, I'm not sure, to be honest. Auckland University Press.
Right.
Publishing, you can certainly get it directly from Auckland University Press. I think it's been released to bookstores, but I don't know which ones, to be honest. If you phoned Auckland University Press, they would tell you where it's been... where it's gone out to, I think.
Okay.
It should be in the main bookstores, I think.
Right.
And I was at a function the other day that was Paper Plus. Paper Plus sponsored a function in which I talked about the book.
Okay.
So I imagine Paper Plus probably have it.
Will most likely have it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Can anyone explain why the modern day whales are so big?
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.